Good evening, everybody. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about some of the work that we're doing in our lab in the University of Cape Town towards food security in Africa. That's a bit of a utopia, but we're trying to do our little bit. This title slide embodies some of the work we're doing in our lab. On the one hand, on the left-hand side, we are looking at maize virus diversity and evolution and spread throughout the African continent. And on the other hand, on the right-hand side, we're looking at making virus-resistant maize using biotechnology. And it's this latter aspect that I will be talking mainly about, and I'll be sharing some of our latest results with you. So in Africa, we call it maize, whereas elsewhere, for example, in the USA, they call it corn, which is derived from the German word kernel. But I think maize is an ideal word for Africans, where 50% of the population rely on maize as a staple food source, because the origin of the word maize is mahis, which literally means the source of life. I was going to talk a little bit about the need for increased maize production, but you've already heard about that from previous speakers, particularly Roger, so in the interest of time, I'm going to skip those slides. What I am going to show you just very briefly is the major maize growing areas in Africa, indicated by the shaded area, are mainly in the eastern and southern area, with a little bit in the west, which is Nigeria, and a very tiny bit in the north, which is Egypt. So what this shows is there is a very large area of maize that is farmed in Africa, and yet productivity is the lowest in the world. So what we obviously need to do is increase this productivity per unit area. But there are many constraints to achieving this. Sub-Saharan Africa poses a huge challenge for us. Whereas in the industrialized world, maize yields benefit from intensive inputs, highly mechanized monocrop production systems, and hybrid maize varieties, in Africa, most maize is farmed by small-scale farmers who, on average, only have about half a hectare. They are mainly subsistence farmers, and on this half a hectare, they often grow several other crops as well, and sometimes livestock. And they lack inputs such as fertilizer and improved seed and irrigation. And then add to this other problems such as conflict, economic and agricultural policies, and HIV and AIDS, and it would seem like these problems are virtually insurmountable. But there is one problem, or one constraint to maize production, which is, in theory, quite easily solvable, and that's maize diseases. Especially with the latest advances in biotechnology, we can do something about this major impact on maize yields. As far as maize viruses go, there's an astounding lack of information on viruses that infect maize in Africa, and virtually no information on the economic impact. But what we do know is that there are at least 11 virus species from at least 9 different families infecting maize. Most of these are single-stranded RNA viruses, but it's this it's a lone virus at the bottom of this table, single-stranded DNA virus, that causes by far the biggest problem. This is maize streak virus. It's certainly the worst viral, causes the worst viral disease of maize, but quite probably the worst of all diseases of maize. What it does is it leads to chlorosis and streaking and stunting. Deformed cobs, or often development of no cobs at all. And it can cause up to 100% yield loss. And what I mean by this is not just that an infected plant can produce no cob, but that a farmer can lose his entire crop, as shown in this bottom picture, which is a commercial maize field in a farm in the northwest of South Africa, where this farmer lost his entire crop to maize streak disease. So it belongs to the family Gemelliviridae. It's one of the smallest viruses known. It's got a single-stranded circular DNA genome of only 2.7 kilobases, and it only expresses four proteins, a movement protein and a coat protein, which are required for encapsulation and cell-to-cell spread of the virus, and two replication-associated proteins, or REP proteins, which are required for replication. And it's transmitted to maize plants by this cute little insect called a leafhopper. Now, commercial farmers can limit the impact of maize streak disease by using insecticides to control the leafhopper, which transmits it. But one of the reasons that this disease threatens the livelihoods of over 200 million subsistence farmers throughout sub-Saharan Africa is that these farmers can't afford expensive insecticides, especially the repeated applications that are necessary to control repeated influxes of the leafhopper. Now, although the economic impact of this disease hasn't been quantified in terms of money, in several surveys, maize streak disease has been cited as African farmers' most significant disease concern, and maize streak disease resistance as among the 10 most desirable traits in improved African maize genotypes. Now, one of the things that we need to do is learn more about which virus strains are causing epidemics and how they are spreading throughout Africa. So that's one of our fields of study, where we are working on the biggest plant pathogenic virus diversity study in the world. And what we've been able to show is movement dynamics of the virus, as shown by these arrows. We've determined that the main disease-causing strain is called MSVA, and this probably emerged in southern Africa around 1863. It then spread across the continent at a rate of 32.5 Ks per year in the direction of these arrows, mainly in a southerly to westerly and a westerly direction. And we've determined there are two hotspots from which almost all new epidemics have emerged in the past 40 years. These are Eastern Central Africa and Southern Africa. Now, this kind of information and monitoring the spread of these new epidemic lineages in these hotspot regions can help us to reduce the effects of maize streak disease. But what other control strategies are there? Typically, evasive measures have been used, which, as I said, is things like insecticide use or the breeding of resistant maize. And breeding organizations have tried to breed resistant maize for the past 40 years, but they've made little progress. And one of the problems is there is only one source of natural tolerance, one gene called MSV1. So if the virus mutates, which is very likely, we've shown it has very high mutation rates and recombines very readily, it could overcome the resistance and then all resistant varieties are rendered useless. So there is an urgent need for novel sources of resistance, and that's where we come in with genetic engineering. I was going to explain the concept of pathogen-derived resistance, which is the strategy we're using to engineer virus-resistant maize, but I'm hoping most of you know about it because I'm going to run out of time. So all I'm going to say is that we used a variation of the strategy called dominant negative mutant, whereby you mutate a gene that is essential to the viral life cycle. You make the plant express it at very high levels, and hopefully this will interfere with the virus life cycle. So the gene we chose to mutate was the MSV rep gene, which is essential for virus replication. We then looked at three different pathogen-derived resistance strategies, which I'll very quickly go through the results of. The first two were reliant on expression of the mutant rep proteins, which I just described, and then the last one was an RNA silencing approach. So for strategy one, we constitutively expressed the mutant rep proteins, and I've just sort of visually shown this by every constitutive expression means that every cell in the plant will express the protein. So if you say, for example, that every cell expressing the protein will turn red, that's what the plant will look like. We made a whole bunch of rep mutants, but these two at the top were the two that we determined could work the best in inhibiting viral replication. One was a full-length rep protein with two mutations in essential motifs that are essential for the protein to work, and the other was a truncated protein with the entire C-terminus truncated. And one of the stumbling blocks we came across was that the full-length rep protein, while it inhibited replication with constitutive expression, it led to stunted plants, as shown by the middle plant in that picture. So what we did was we went ahead with the truncated rep and explored that further. We then developed an assay to test our different strategies and how effective they were in inhibiting MSV replication. So what this involved was co-bombardment of MSV with the dominant negative mutant gene, in this case the truncated rep. After allowing 4 days of replication to occur, we then did a real-time quantitative PCR to determine viral DNA levels. We made wild-type replication. We set that at a value of 1, so anything above 1 increases replication, anything below 1 decreases replication. And this way we can standardize all the strategies into one graph. We had a positive control, which was MSV bombarded with the empty vector. That's obviously the vector that the rep gene is cloned into, but it's bombarded without the rep gene, and it should not interfere with replication. And what these plots are box and whisker plots. So what they show is the range of values obtained from different replicates. The dots are kind of outliers, and then the horizontal line is the median. And what this is showing is the empty vector had no effect on virus replication because the median was 1. You then obviously have a negative control, which should be 0, but you often get background readings. And then you have your test construct. And in this case, the truncated rep reduced replication by 50-fold. So having shown that that worked, we then made a whole bunch of transgenic maize lines with this gene. We challenged them with the virus. We got quite variable results with different lines, but with this one, MTC117, which was the 117th line that we produced, we achieved MSV resistance and it was reproducible. So this graph shows infection rates, percent infection over time. We have a sensitive control, MSV sensitive control, which is golden bantam, and there's over a 90% infection rate. We then have PAN77, which is a conventionally bred MSV tolerant hybrid, which is less sensitive than golden bantam, but it's not all that resistant. It had almost a 70% infection rate, whereas our transgenic line was much less susceptible with only a 30% infection rate. We then looked at the next generation, did another trial, and the results shown by the red line were completely reproducible. So having shown that this dominant negative mutant strategy works, we wanted to see, could we do the same thing, but this time make the expression of the protein induced only upon virus infection instead of constitutive? So again, constitutive, we would have our plant completely red because every cell expresses the protein, whereas with induced expression, this is shown by just a couple of red dots on the leaves, because only those cells that the virus infects will express the protein. In actual fact, what this would really mean is probably 10 or 20 cells out of trillions of cells will produce the protein. So the advantages of this is, first of all, resistance genes don't need to be expressed in the absence of virus infection. It's just a waste on the metabolic load. Secondly, MSV is not seed transmissible, and so the foreign protein won't be expressed in the cob, which is the edible portion. And thirdly, expression of some resistance proteins can cause developmental defects in the crop, whereas if you make the expression induced, this won't be a problem. And that brings us back to the full-length rep that I mentioned a couple of slides ago with the double mutation, which did cause developmental defects when constitutively expressed. So we decided to try this virus-inducible expression. And using the same box and whisker plots, what we have here is compared with the 50-fold reduction in replication when constitutively expressed, when induced by the virus, the same truncated rep gene only reduced replication 6-fold. However, the full-length rep with 2 mutations in it reduced replication 25-fold. And although this is less than the constitutively expressed one, it's still good enough that we would like to explore this strategy further. So we've made transgenic maize already. It's in the glasshouse ready for challenge with the virus. And then lastly, the last strategy is RNA silencing, which again, I'm hoping most of you know exactly what that means, and I'm not going to go into the background. We used a hairpin RNA strategy where we cloned a portion of the rep gene in the sense and antisense version, separated by an intron, and when the plant transcribes the RNA, it will splice out the intron and the sense will anneal to the antisense and produce double-stranded RNA. And this is a trigger to initiate gene silencing. So using this strategy, it was very, very effective. The hairpin construct reduced virus replication 214-fold. So when comparing all three, we found constitutive expression and virus-inducible expression was effective, but silencing was by far the most effective. And there are many other advantages to the silencing strategy, apart from it being the most effective. First of all, it harnesses a natural mechanism of genetic regulation. Secondly, no protein is expressed. And this means it will probably have fewer deleterious effects on plant development, and is also perceived by regulators as safer than those strategies that rely on protein expression. Also, any viral coding or non-coding sequences can be targeted, and therefore this mechanism could be exploited to engineer resistance to any virus pathogen in any transformable crop species. Now, so what I've very quickly shown you is that producing virus or MSV-resistant maize or resistance to any other viruses is entirely achievable, but there are several hurdles that remain before these efforts reach the poor farmer. These could be the subject of a whole other talk. These hurdles include political and cultural hurdles, the prevailing anti-GM perception in Africa, the lack of suitable regulatory systems in a lot of African countries, and so on. But what it boils down to in the end is access to quality seed. The quality seed is out there, but it's not reaching or it's not benefiting the poor farmer. And one of the reasons for this is cultural. For example, over one-third of the developing world's maize area is still planted with farm-saved seed. And this seed has a very uncertain genetic background and a very variable quality. An example of this is an extensive survey that we undertook in Uganda of Ugandan farmers throughout the country. And we found that a lot of the farmers didn't even know what maize genotype they were growing. One more slide. they had no idea what they were growing. Even those farmers that reported were growing improved genotypes, including genotypes that were bred for MSV tolerance, we found that those plants no longer had any MSV tolerance. And we suspect the reason for this is that the farmers were saving the seed for the next generation, for the next season, and they kept replanting it. And eventually, the maize loses the qualities that it was bred for. So one of the things that's urgently needed is education of the farmer and access to information. Most small-scale subsistence farmers are located in very isolated rural areas. They're not integrated into the market economy, and they're not well informed on the available improved germplasm that's out there. So I just want to end by saying, with a thought, which is, as we look to the future in the beautiful continent we call Africa, our biggest challenge is to ensure that the enormous advances made in agricultural biotechnology don't once again bypass the millions of small-scale farmers that still do not enjoy the fruits of the Green Revolution decades after its inception. Thank you.